In the latest installment of our collective nightmare, we find ourselves in a world where the absurdity of human cruelty knows no bounds. A 17-year-old Palestinian boy, Waleed Khalid Ahmad, has become yet another tragic footnote in the relentless cycle of despair that is the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The young man died in an Israeli prison after what can only be described as a slow-motion execution by starvation. His body was found with signs of severe malnutrition, an appalling testament to the indifference towards human life. Ahmad's crime, allegedly throwing stones and Molotov cocktails, accusations that remain unproven due to repeated delays in court hearings. He was arrested and then left to languish without charge. A Kafkaesque situation where justice is not just blind but apparently non-existent. While authorities scramble to form investigative teams and promise reports that will likely gather dust on some bureaucrat's desk, a family mourns their child who was taken too soon. The autopsy paints a grim picture: extreme weight loss, muscle atrophy, and an emaciated frame, all symptoms of prolonged neglect. Yet somehow, this isn't shocking anymore. It's just another day in our collective nightmare where accountability is as rare as compassion. Since October 2023, at least 63 Palestinians have died in detention under similar circumstances. These are not isolated incidents, but part of a broader tapestry woven from threads of systemic abuse and neglect. And while official statements assure us that medical teams responded as required, one can't help but wonder if these responses are merely performative gestures designed to placate rather than rectify. Meanwhile, Ahmad's family waits for his body, held hostage even in death, as they wrestle with the painful truth delivered over a phone call by those who conducted his autopsy. It's hard not to feel like we're all trapped in some macabre theater production where hope makes occasional cameos only to be quickly snuffed out by reality. As arrests continue unabated and more lives hang precariously in the balance, one must ask, how many more children need to suffer before something changes? But deep down, we already know the answer. Probably too many, because that's just how nightmares work.
Oh yes, white people problems. Today, we're talking about the ultimate existential crisis for folks who have never seen a real crisis. The White Lotus season finale bingo. Yes, you heard me right. Bingo. Because nothing screams high-stakes drama like matching squares on a card while sipping a non-poisonous smoothie. For those not in the know, and let's face it, if you're not in the know, are you even living? The White Lotus is that show where rich people go to a resort more dangerous than your average episode of Survivor. It's basically like watching people vacation and complain about how hard it is to be them. Riveting. Now imagine you're Victoria, I don't want to take a test, Ratliff. Your biggest problem isn't the rising cost of living or climate change. It's figuring out whether Parker Posey gets more screen time than lorazepam itself. Spoiler alert, they both make you feel kind of numb. And then there's Chloe introducing us all to Loser Back Home, or as I like to call it, anyone who's not binge-watching the show with an artisanal charcuterie board by their side. So here we are with our bingo cards ready, because who needs suspense when you've got predictable plot points? If you're lucky enough to fill those squares before someone gets metaphorically or literally stabbed at this murder-prone paradise, congratulations. You've won absolutely nothing except maybe bragging rights at your next book club meeting. But hey, enjoy that game night with dear friends and a healthy relationship, which is code for people who tolerate your obsession with fictional rich people problems. Cheers.
Ah, the sweet symphony of societal progress, where we find ourselves in a world so advanced that the resurgence of a disease once thought nearly extinct is now a headline. Welcome to the Daily Dose of Dystopia, where irony isn't just an accessory, it's the whole outfit. In West Texas, a child has tragically succumbed to measles, marking yet another notch on the outbreak tally board. It's almost poetic how we've managed to circle back to battling diseases with names that sound like they belong in dusty medical textbooks rather than modern news reports. But who needs history when you can repeat it? Our Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., known for his nuanced views on vaccines, read, not very pro-vaccine, made his way down to console grieving families, a move as comforting as deploying a firefighter who's afraid of water. Meanwhile, teams from the CDC have been dispatched to Texas, heroically rushing in after the fire has already spread through half the neighborhood. With 481 cases reported in Texas alone, and most victims unvaccinated, it seems our collective memory is about as short-lived as a Snapchat story. The MMR vaccine is touted as our knight in shining armor against this medieval foe. Yet here we are, watching it all unfold like some tragic play, where everyone knows the ending, but refuses to change their lines. The numbers keep climbing across state borders, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Kansas, all joining this unfortunate club no one wants membership in. Experts warn of underreporting because nothing says, "We've got this under control," quite like missing data. Drive-up measles screenings are now available in Lubbock County, because if there's anything more dystopian than lining up for fast food from your car window, it's lining up for medical tests while idling at urgent care centers. Senator Bill Cassidy calls for unequivocal statements from health officials about getting vaccinated. A revolutionary idea if only someone had thought of it before. Meanwhile, RFK Jr.'s previous attempts at minimizing measles risks echo like a bad joke told at an inappropriate time. And so we continue our march towards tomorrow, with all the grace and foresight of lemmings nearing a cliff's edge. In this brave new world, where lessons from history are optional electives rather than core curriculum requirements, one can only hope that reality will eventually catch up with common sense before another child pays the ultimate price for society's collective amnesia.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the great mysteries of life, like why video ads are louder than your existential dread. Today's inspiration comes from an article titled Bernie Sanders, which, spoiler alert, has nothing to do with Bernie Sanders. Instead, it questions the very nature of existence through the lens of malfunctioning video players and intrusive advertisements. Imagine you're sitting in front of your screen, ready to consume content that promises a momentary escape from the void. But alas, you're met with a spinning wheel of doom as your video player struggles to load. It's almost poetic, isn't it? A digital reflection of our own attempts to make sense of this chaotic universe, only to be thwarted by buffering icons and frozen screens. And then there's the ad that blares at a volume loud enough to wake Nietzsche from his eternal slumber. Is it a desperate plea for attention or just another reminder that silence is but an illusion? The irony here is palpable. We crave meaning and connection yet find ourselves bombarded by meaningless noise. But let's not forget those moments when the ad simply refuses to play. It's as if technology itself has decided that today is not the day for consumerism. Perhaps it's trying to tell us something profound, or maybe it just needs an update. In this absurd dance between human intention and technological failure, one must ask, are we truly in control? Or are we mere spectators in a cosmic comedy where even our devices have developed a sense of humor? So next time you find yourself staring at an unresponsive screen, remember, life is much like a video player that never quite loads. It's unpredictable, often disappointing, yet strangely comforting in its consistency. And maybe that's all part of its charm. Or perhaps it's just another glitch in the Matrix. Join us next time on the Existential Crisis Hour, where we continue to question everything while achieving absolutely nothing.
In the capitalist's fever dream, where innocence is commodified and nostalgia is sold by the pound, adults clutch their plushies with a desperation that speaks volumes about a society teetering on the brink of its own absurdity. The stuffed toy market, once a child's domain, now thrives on the insecurities of grown-ups who find solace in soft fabrics and synthetic stuffing. Here lies the grotesque reality. Adulthood has been hijacked by a relentless pursuit of comfort amidst chaos. Maria Fowler, emblematic of this new breed of consumerism, amasses an army of 500 plush toys, a collection not for her children, but for herself. Her story is not unique. It echoes across cities from New York to Paris, where jellycats and squishmallows are heralded as saviors in times of existential dread. Plushies have become more than mere toys. They are talismans against the harshness of adult life, symbols of a yearning to escape responsibilities that seem ever more daunting. The statistics are staggering. By 2024, adults accounted for over 20% of plush toy sales. This trend reveals an unsettling truth about our cultural trajectory. Adults clinging to childhood relics, as if these objects could shield them from the encroaching void. It's a testament to how deeply consumer culture has infiltrated our psyches, persuading us that happiness can be purchased at any age. As economic and political uncertainties loom large, people turn inward, seeking refuge in bygone days when life felt simpler. Yet this retreat into nostalgia is less about reclaiming lost youth and more about rejecting the burdensome expectations foisted upon them by modern life. The obsession with plushies signifies not just comfort, but resistance. a refusal to conform to traditional notions of maturity. This phenomenon extends beyond personal collections into public spaces. Restaurants offer menus featuring stuffed replicas instead of real food. Fashion runways showcase plushie accessories as if they were haute couture. It's a surreal carnival where adulthood is mocked even as it's redefined, an indictment of a society so disillusioned with itself that it finds solace in childish whims. But beneath this veneer lies a darker narrative, a collective arrested development masquerading as empowerment. The rise and fall of girl boss culture gives way to girl math, where indulgence is rationalized under the guise of self-care, while sidestepping genuine growth or accountability. In this world, purchasing yet another $300 jelly cat becomes an act akin to rebellion rather than mindless consumption. What does it mean when grown individuals find identity in items meant for toddlers? When cultural icons like Broad City or relics like The Little Prince become blueprints for resisting adulthood? Perhaps it's an attempt at renegotiating what it means to grow up. Or perhaps it's merely symptomatic of deeper societal decay, masked by cute faces and cuddly bodies. For Iris Lee and countless others like her, plushies provide temporary relief from life's pressures, a soft distraction from harsh realities lurking outside nursery-colored walls. Yet one cannot help but wonder whether such escapism offers true liberation, or simply perpetuates an endless cycle fueled by capitalism's insatiable hunger for profit at any cost. In this fever dream spun from polyester fibers and market research reports lies capitalism's cruel joke, selling back fragments of childhood we never truly outgrew, because growing up was never really part of their plan anyway.